cosas con tener the big enterprise officials as well. We meet this morning to interact with Dr. Roche regarding the development strengthen the development at the institution. Members of the portfolio committee in the last meeting felt we need to interact with the two FDF charities and also a part of our oversight role. We have only one item on the agenda, is that the panel should be first on the recent development. We were not specific about which issues or what issues. You will recall the beginning of this year there were a number of issues regarding the labor contract, the minister was not informed, the surgery and so on, and also the previous CEO and other officials which we agreed with the first that we provided with the report. Whilst we were waiting for the report, we learned that they are no longer in the service of the enterprise. So these are the issues which members would like to interact with the council. Without wasting much time, I will hand over to the chair and we will allow members to interact. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, we thank you for affording us an opportunity to come to address you on issues which have been prominent in the media space as the activities of the DLR. Before I take the committee through, I would wish, with your permission, Chair, to introduce the DLR delegation. Myself, I'm Professor Mainza, the current chairperson of the board. On my left, I've got General Kavinde, who is a member of the board and a chair of HR and Transformation Committee of the board. On my right, I've got the acting chief financial officer, Mr. Odom Fana. And on my far right, I've got Vuela, who is our communication executive at DNL. The presentation is divided into two portions. The first part of the presentation will deal with operational issues, which have been a subject of media coverage in the recent weeks and months. And that part of the presentation will be led by the Chief Financial Officer. The second part of the presentation will relate to board decisions relating to suspension and other related matters. I will take the committees on those matters. Before I hand it over to the acting Chief Financial Officer, it's important for me just to, in a sec, to deal with the governance framework in which DNL operates under. We are a state-owned company governed by this Act, governed by the Memorandum of Incorporation, governed by the Public Finance Management Act, governed by the Shareholder Compact, governed by the strategic intent of the shareholder, the other legal instruments that governs us. The board, in terms of the law, controls the affairs of the company. That's what the company says. However, in terms of delegation of authority, majority of the operational issues that takes place in the company are done by the executive in terms of delegation of authority, which is signed by the shareholder representative with the minister and the board of DL. So the
For the purposes of this presentation, the board will deal with those matters that in terms of delegation of authority falls within the competency of the board, and the executives will deal with those matters within their competency in terms of delegation of authority, and then we will then take questions. With your permission, Chair and Honourable Member, may I then hand over to the Acting Chief Financial Officer, who will take us through the first part of the presentation. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, the committee members, and everybody in the House today. Good morning. The presentation, as the chairperson says, is split into two sessions. If we can go to the content stage, we take this opportunity to come and present ourselves and the affairs of the business in front of this committee very, very seriously, and we hope to do nothing other than leave this committee well informed of what we do inside the business as it relates to the issues that have been playing themselves in the media space. The structure of the presentation there is that we will deal with the issue around strategic partnership, which we think as a business denial, it's important for the committee to appreciate why it is that we play in that space and what those strategic partnerships bring to denial as a business. We are going to deal generically on how we actually select these particular partners. We are going to talk specifically about VR Laser South Africa, and I think this is important, the distinction between the two companies, as well as VR Laser Asia, which then leads us automatically to the Denel Asia joint venture, which we do have in that particular space. The second last point, which is about the suspension of the executives and related matters, is the second element that my board chairperson referred to, which I will leave to the board members to deal with. With your permission, Chair, I will then jump straight into the following slide. I will not spend any time on this particular slide. I think everybody is aware of the issues that have been playing themselves in the media space. You articulated them quite clearly and well, Madam Chair, in your opening statement. The issues really are around VR Laser as well as the suspended employees, and we hope to clarify those issues through this presentation. Let's then just spend a moment, Chair, understanding Denel and Denel's strategy in terms of strategic partnerships, particularly in the market in which we operate. It is very clear for us that we first and foremost are a strategic asset to the South African government, and more specifically the DoD, in as far as the supply of defense material is concerned and the security and the sovereignty of the South African society. That is our core purpose of existence. Now, our first customer, our primary customer, certainly then becomes DoD. But to run an establishment that doesn't put itself as a burden to the fiscus of our South African economy, which as we all know is already relatively overstretched, it is important for Denel to venture into export markets to create the sustainability, at least financially, and maintain the capability that's required to support our DoD, and more particularly during phases where there is not enough contracts coming from our primary customers. So it's important for us to play in the space, and it is the thrust of our strategic efforts to grow in the space. As reported at the end of 2015-16, we were sitting at 52% of our revenue being based on export sales. We did report when we were in front of the committee at the time when we were announcing those results that our efforts are that we want to grow that closer to 60% in the financial year that just recently ended. And those results will obviously be tabled in front of the committee at the right time. Where is this business in the export arena specifically coming from? And those four particular areas, and they are essentially coming in terms, they are listed in terms of their importance to our growth prospects. Middle East remains the biggest, single biggest, most important area for our growth. Asia Pacific, which currently today we are only participating in that market through our relationships in Malaysia, and we see a lot of growth in that area, in that region. In fact, that region is coming in terms of defense budget growth is second to the United States, which talks to any global serious defense player in the market in which we operate that does not occupy that space is doing that at their own peril. So that market is really, really important for us. Europe, we are playing in Europe, albeit very small at the stage.
Yeah, but can I just interrupt you? Time is not on our side. If we can just go straight to issues.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will send it to that chair. I think the last point we are really making there is that these markets which we are aiming as our growth markets are essentially saying to us the days when we send out RFPs, place an order from an offshore supplier who then exports articles into our markets are gone. We are looking for partnerships in the markets in which we are based, and we want that to come with some form of transfer of technology. So our strategy is then looking at a particular event, and that obviously favors more and more an approach that's talking to a JV model than what we've seen historically, which is more your technical advisor marketing approach. The following slide there will just quickly summarize the thrust of what's coming out of that slide, and that thrust is the strategic partnership approach is nothing new. And you select your strategic partner based on the due diligence that which you've done without any guarantees. And you put all your efforts in making the relationship work. And what we see here is that up to today, our strategy, our basis for selecting our partners, and our work that we've done with our partners have actually yielded a very real positive result for Denelva business. I will take just one example out of this particular slide here, and that's the third last joint venture we have, which is Tawazun Dynamics in the UAE specifically. We currently have about 52 million rand sales out of JV, which is based in the UAE as a growth market. But out of that relationship, we have been able to receive directly, not through the JV, directly into Denel in excess of 2 billion rand worth of orders through marketing efforts that are happening inside that JV. And I want to just specifically say, I will draw a lot of parallels between that particular relationship and what we have formulated as part of Denel Asia. In the next slide, that talks about how to specifically select these partners that we have. I just want to put it out there categorically here that this is not a procurement process. This is a process to establish relationships in specific markets that we do believe will give us the results that which we are looking for. So what we obviously do is we scan the markets. We use a lot of our market intelligence in the markets which we operate in, identify players in those markets that meet our value system, that meet certain criteria that which we're looking for, which are different from a market to a market. And if you look at the Tawazun example, we did not look at seven different players to select Tawazun in the UAE. Based on our market intelligence, we specifically targeted Tawazun. We went into that relationship, and this relationship is obviously, as you saw in the previous slide, is starting to yield real results for the NEM. Specifically now, as it relates to Denel Asia, here we obviously had options to look at. And this is absolutely important in relation to the previous slide, that it is not a standard process that we end up with four or five options to look at. In the UAE, we only had one option we looked at. It worked, and we saw that in that particular slide. In this particular market, because of the geographical spread of that market, that's what the UAE market, we looked at four potential partners. We ended up with our partner because all the other partners had actually joined forces with competing original equipment manufacturers globally. So in other words, they were already in marriages that they could not partner with us. And we ended up with selecting the partner that which we selected, which we believe is the right partner for our business. And more specifically, in as far as it addresses our current issue of trying to get to a financially sustainable Denel that is liquid enough to focus on its core business. So we needed a partner that is not going to be claiming from us, but rather bringing into the relationship. And that's where we think we are. Now, if we get to Denel Asia quickly, it's important that we understand this because this has really, really played itself, and there's been a lot of misinformation that we've seen in the media space. The facts are as follows in as far as VR Laser South Africa. VR Laser South Africa, certainly it is a fact that the Gupta family is an equity participant in VR Laser South Africa. But it is also a fact that they are not a majority equity participant in that business. As evidence there, Mr. Essa is the majority participant in that business. We have mentioned this point over and over again. I'm not going to touch into it in terms of our relationship historically with the others of South Africa. But the point that I think is absolutely important, which we must address, is the last point, Chairperson. Chairperson, in this point, we are addressing an issue that's been finding itself in the media, that we've got this VR Laser South Africa business, that which we are partnered with, and in the better contract they stand to gain 10 billion rands out of us. Absolutely untrue, Chairperson. The facts are as follows. We have this particular project, which is circa 12 billion rands in totality. Out of this particular program, we have multitude of suppliers, which VR Laser is one of those suppliers. And VR Laser in that particular contract, in totality, we haven't placed all the orders as yet, in totality they stand to gain only about 400 million. When I say gain, I'm talking gross revenues. Now, it's very clear from this point, Chairperson, that if you take 400 out of this circa 12 billion rands worth of contract which we have on the ledger, there is a lot of other significant suppliers within that contract, which we are also dealing with. And it is an irony for us that this particular supplier, who is delivering value, in fact, I can also add that we followed due process in selecting them with multiple tenders that were submitted. They were the cheapest and technically the strongest in us selecting this particular supply. If we move on to the next slide, we then get to VR Laser Asia. These are two distinct businesses, but they certainly are joined in a form, and want to particularly point that out. Now, VR Laser, evidently, there's been an issue about this is new business, the capability there, we are misled into believing that this is a business that has been running and Denel has been doing business with for more than 15 years. The fact as follows, Chairperson, that the business certainly was incorporated around about June in 2014. So in other words, it's a business that to date hasn't got any operations in it, hasn't operated. It's a business registered, there hasn't been any operations inside that business. But what makes this business attractive to us is that this business is strongly related to the VR Laser South Africa business through its owner, Mr. Essa, who, remember, in the previous slide owns about 55% of the RAs of South Africa. And in terms of our shareholder agreement and our memorandum of incorporation, we have made it very clear that that capability that resides in VR Laser South Africa will be brought into this partnership. So then the second last point is talking about the funding element that I spoke about. Dinel, as it sits today, is a business that's working on a shoestring budget in as far as liquidity is concerned. We cannot afford the cost which we've seen spent in India, particularly historically when we were involved in that market. We don't have that kind of money today, and this partner is certainly committed to that money into the relationship. When I say committed, without that money coming from this partner, there is no JV. That's the condition of our partnership. And I said, obviously, there's a lot of parallels that we can draw out of this, and the key to those is there's been a lot of statements thrown in the media space that seems to suggest that we are throwing away our IP and how IP is going to be managed. We have a model in our business that works, as you saw, the magnitude of our joint ventures, which is about a manufacturing license that is very clearly seeking to say the ownership of the IP remains and resides within Dinel. But we can provide a manufacturing license in markets where the requirement for the transfer of technology is a matter to be dealt with, which in this particular case we see that ultimately would be the case. The rationale for us getting into this center, a lot of stories, people saying, you know, there is no business to be made in Asia. I just want to put it out there, Chair, we are very clear in our mind that if we do not participate in the Asian market as demand, then we are not serious about creating a financially sustainable Dinel, growing Dinel as a business. We have been in India, we've bent ourselves in India historically in terms of the financial investment we made in that particular market, which was around 500 million and just in business development activities. And we are very clear in our minds that we ought to do things differently. We were blacklisted in that market as a result of issues relating to marketing advisors, and we are clear in our minds that our governance processes as we re-enter that market has to be top of the class. We are focused on that particular issue. As the rest is a self-explanatory, Chair, we are getting three things essentially from this particular partner. 100 million rand, which will be supporting our business development activities, committed, and I made this particular point. The market and industry knowledge, I just need to specifically touch on this particular one that we are not misled, is that this partnership we have has a clear understanding which has been demonstrated to us in non-defense related businesses within that market, adjacent markets, that is, which we are clear in our minds that will benefit this particular relationship. I did mention there are steel cutting and fabrication IP that which we have contracted that they will be bringing from their South African business into this joint venture. I think this particular one, Chair, if at all, this is the one we need to spend a bit of time just trying to understand. This is about the concept of the establishment of this business not having been properly following due process in terms of legal approvals by the shareholder and National Treasurer. And I think it's absolutely important that everybody understands this particular. The first point is that this issue, our new board came into office around about July 2015. In September 2015 was the first board meeting. In that board meeting, matters relating to establishment of a joint venture in Asia were tabled to this board for approval. And it's important that we understand if the executives coming to the board asking for approval to establish a relationship in Asia, which the board duly approved. But if we leave that and we start getting into the process which we followed, in the legal process we followed in terms of approvals, on the 29th of October, in line with the materiality and significance framework which regulates the delegations of authority between us and the shareholder department, we were required to submit a pre-notification submission. Now, a pre-notification submission tells both our shareholder department as well as National Treasury the strategic rationale, the partners identified, and the process which we are going to follow to get to the formal approval process with the due diligence that which we're going to do. So in other words, we informed both DPE and National Treasury as early as the 29th of October last year that this was to happen. On the 23rd of November, we then received a response only, I must mention this, only from the shareholder department, which was saying, we've received a letter, please go ahead and engage with your partners, but make sure you address the following issues and then come back with a formal application as soon as you've covered those issues. Now, this was obviously 24 days after the first submission was made. On the 11th of December, we then concluded addressing all the conditions that were addressed in the letter that we received from DPE, submitted our official PFMA application to both National Treasury and DPE. Now, the Act is very clear around this process. Section 54 is unambiguous about this process and is talking about in the event that you do not receive any response from the shareholder department, you may deem that the approval has been granted at the expiry of 30 days. That 30 days expired on the 12th of January, 2016. We did not establish Denel Asia on the 30th of January. We established Denel Asia on the 29th of January, 2016. At that date, it's important to note, we still had not heard nothing, neither from the shareholder department nor from National Treasury. And as you see, it was 37 days since the first the submission of the PFMA application, 91 days from the original notification, which was the notification that which we submitted. The first letter we received from National Treasury was on the 5th of February, 2016, requesting additional information. Now, that is 56 days from PFMA application, 98 days from pre-notification. And at that stage, as you obviously see in this slide, we had already established the business on the basis of what the Act allowed us to do. So I think that's important to understand. And as far as we are concerned, yet again, we have followed all due process in this regard. The process, as I referred to, touching specifically on the pieces of legislation that which we're confined to obviously comply with. The first piece of legislation which I spoke about is the Section 54, and the second piece of legislation is Section 51. These pieces of legislation are talking about the same thing. The one piece of legislation, which is 54, is about approval by the executive authority specifically and notification to National Treasury, and goes on to talk about the 30-day issue that I've already touched on. The second piece of legislation, which is Section 51, is talking specifically about the approval from the National Treasury and talks about a reasonable time that they must be afforded to respond to the application. And that reasonable time is well defined in reading those two acts together, is the 30 days. And as you saw in the previous slide, we did not form the JV immediately after the 30 days. We formed that JV 56 days after. So it's very clear the process which we followed. I must stress in that last particular point that we are taking the engagement from National Treasury in a very positive light. We have engaged with National Treasury. We've had two meetings already with National Treasury where we were clarifying in exactly the same amount of detail as you are seeing in front of you today, my chair. And we are continuing to have those engagements with the National Treasury, certainly through our shareholder department, TP. I will pause at this point and hand over to my chairperson, to my board chairperson, with your permission, chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. What I appreciate, all the presentations being made, I think you do understand that we have time constraints, all of us, because this has been a special meeting set us to finish at 10 o'clock. And if we're going to hear presentations and not be, be in a position to ask questions, it's going to put us in a... then there's no point in having a meeting. I think we've heard enough now to be able to ask some direct questions, at least on this issue, before we move on to the suspension of executives. And if you can allow that, then, you know, at least we can. Otherwise, we need to come back on another day to continue our discussions.
No, our thing, because it's only one slide, let's give him 2 minutes to do the presentation of the executives, and we'll engage on that then.
Well, thank you, Jay. I would actually not waste your time by repeating what is written. I actually assuming that the Honourable Member read what is in the presentation. But maybe just one emphasis. The whole course of suspension and the subsequent action taken against the former chief executive and the CFO was mainly because of the LSA transaction, which compromised the liquidity of the NEL. The NEL board, like any reasonable board, took a decision to say, look, these are two executives who overcommitted the company. They borrowed over $750 million from financial institutions, played the institutions against each other, contravened the instruction of the shareholder. The instruction of the shareholder, amongst other things, was that don't play the two banks against each other and don't agree to any other terms except the terms that you have presented. What was presented to the shareholder at the time was net bank loan of 5 years for $455 million and actual loan for 5 years for $400 million. Then the executive went ahead and changed the terms of net bank to 6 months, of which, as we see it here, Dell has to pay $455 million to net bank at the end of June, the funds which we do not have. So I can go on to list the contravention by the said executive as far as the conditions of approval from the shareholder and from the National Treasury. And the fact that the changes of the term sheet was neither approved by the general board by then and by the shareholder, and that the liquidity of the company has been compromised. In the view of the NEL board, this was nothing less than a reckless lending. It has never happened in the history of the NEL that we borrowed over $750 million to acquire a company similar to the biggest division of the NEL. The company that we bought here is a vehicle manufacturing business. The NEL lane system is probably one of the biggest vehicle manufacturing company in South Africa. So we bought a business that we have. So the whole rationale to buy this business, in the best wisdom of the board, was seriously compromised and flawed. So what has happened now, the CFO is undergoing a disciplinary hearing. The disciplinary hearing has commenced. The company secretary is the same. The chief executive, the board has decided to not recommend the renewal of his contract because his contract is expiring. However, we gave him an option to come before the disciplinary hearing if he wished so. But in the wisdom of the board, it was the best decision to actually say, we're not going to recommend that your contract be extended. And then if you are interested to come to your hearing, we take you on the hearing. So I think I will just, from there, I will leave it there and take questions.
Honourable members, can I take the hand of Honourable Rancho and then Honourable Mazzoni and then Honourable Singh?
Thanks, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation that we have, or the clarification that we've got here. Mine is a little bit, I'm a little bit worried, Chairperson of the board, because for me, as much as you are saying you are going now on a hearing with the CFO, if I'm not the CFO, how is he or how is the company feeling? What is the company's feeling of dismissing a person and then asking that person back again to come and be heard? And every other person that has been dismissed as the media, every person that has been dismissed is called back to come and have a hearing. How do you explain that? Because if I'm dismissed and be called back for a hearing, why am I coming to come and explain myself? Because I think I should have been given a chance to explain myself before you take any other further, maybe that's the way you are dealing with this, but we need to be clarified on those things. And also to the first presenter, the chairperson has said you are being governed by under PSLA, and you clearly explained your processes, your processes of going through the appointment or the deal that you have with the joint venture, yeah, or with our laser, the laser company that you went into a deal with, and the processes that you have taken. I think for us to have a clean governance and for us to have a mutual understanding, as the act is, you have done everything that the act said you must do. But I think there is a mutual understanding that should have happened between the two of you, the treasurer, because now it seems as if you have jumped over what the treasurer has said, and there is no one except me and you that knows that you have you have gone through all these processes. But now you are still saying you are still speaking to the treasury, you are still engaging the treasury. And out of those engagements, nobody knows what will happen after that, after those engagements. What if you went beyond your mandate and then the treasury finds it not to be correct what you have done? Are you going then to go back and take back what you have done, and what will cost the, what will be the cost thereafter for the company to do? The group task that you spoke about, and you said it does not have a long and a bigger share of your, I just want to check, I don't want to say something that the shareholder holds a bigger share in the company. If the agreement between you and the Guptas or whoever that is within the company that has got a share in the company, are there no illegal things that are happening between the two of you, the company itself, and the especially the Gupta family, because it's the Gupta family that we hear about. The other companies that are working within the Dinel space, we don't hear anything, and we would love to hear about each and every company that works within the SOC to know, for us to know if there is no illegal deals that are happening between the two of you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And Chairperson, allow me to thank you for responding to my request to call the NOL to appear before us as a committee, as I think that the state that we find ourselves in now is very precarious, and it's causing a lot of uncertainty in the country, and it's resulting in a lot of international uncertainty as well, Chair. Chair, I'd like to start, if you'll allow me, by talking about the removal of the executives. Now, what we do know, and we know this for sure, is that 3.4 million rand, this is what the forced removal of Mr. Saluji has cost us, because this is what happens when you don't go through the processes of having a disciplinary hearing, and someone is paid out until the end of their term of office, which is happening as Mr. Saluji is being paid out until January 2017, if I'm not mistaken. Even the chairperson of SCOPA last week, and I quote, said it was fruitless and wasteful expenditure on behalf of Danelle. Chair, my biggest worry is this. In everything that we've heard today and everything that we read in the media, the shareholder claims not to be in contact with Danelle and claims not to know about the suspension. When questioned by the media, the shareholder, and let's just call the shareholder, who she is, Minister Brown herself, correctly said that she cannot comment because she hasn't received information from the board. And yet the board appears before us today in Parliament, and she, I must reiterate, that when you testify before Parliament, it is the same as testifying before a court. We are told that the shareholder was informed, the shareholder in fact gave instruction, but then we are told by the shareholder when she appears before us and when she appeared in the media that she knew nothing about this and could therefore not comment. Now it's very worrying when you have a state-owned entity claiming that the shareholder knows something and then the shareholder turning around and saying actually she was not informed. A disciplinary hearing was never set down for Mr. Saluji. Let's just be honest. Neither was one set down for Elizabeth Africa, neither was one set down for Fikile Mhlontlo. Minister Brown herself said she was never briefed. All she knew that was the apparent reason was failure to comply with the Act in the BAE stake. However, Treasury has subsequently come out and said that permission was given by Treasury. The Department of Defence has subsequently come out and said that permission was given by the Department of Defence. And wait for it, the Department of Public Enterprises has written a letter to say that it gave permission for it. So we've just heard that this is the primary reason for the suspension, because it was irregular and, reckless blending. But we had three departments who have given permission for us. So now a serious explanation needs to be given. Because who's lying to us? Is the minister lying to us? Is Treasury lying to us? Is the Department of Defence lying to us? We need to know where we stand on this. Also, Chair, something has just been said here which worries me tremendously. What CEO in their right mind would go from a loan of 5 years to a loan of 5 months? And quite frankly, what bank in their right mind would allow such a change in transaction? And that needs to be explained to us too, because the bank earns interest on a loan. And I happen to know someone who has a loan with a bank. There is no way I applied to the bank to shorten the term from 5 years to 5 months. Would that bank grant me that right? Because they would lose so much money and interest that the original lending process would be null, and for them it would be fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So I think a full explanation of how we go from 5 years to 5 months needs to be explained. Chair, I think it's important to note that immediately following the suspension of Saluji Africa and Mhlontlo, the new venture was formed. And this new venture, no matter what anyone says to me today, contravenes the BFMA. Now let me tell you, Chairperson, there are a few people with whom I have a lot of respect, and I say that with a very sad heart. But one of them, in terms of dealing with acts and with compliance with acts, that I have great respect for, is Pravin Gordhan. And Pravin Gordhan himself has come up and said that there was no PFMA adherence to this VRLaser deal. Now, why would Minister Gordhan, having come in the precarious situation that he finds himself in, why would he come out and say that if there was, in fact, PFMA permission for the deal, and if anything was being adhered to? I find it hard to believe why a minister would lie. There's no reason that a minister would lie. So I need that explained to me. Chair, VRLaser, we know, is owned by the Gupta's business partner, Salim Etta. We also know that the Gupta's brother's son, in other words, Gupta's niece, nephew rather, who is nearly 24 years old, also sits on the board. In fact, Minister Gordhan went further to say that the registration of Danelle Asia was illegal and contrary to the PFMA. That's what he said, Chair. And I cannot understand why Mr. Gordhan would like us. Chair, then further to that, I want to read you something, because this is the reason I asked for the meeting with Danelle, because we need to clear these things up. Honourable Quibus Marie, who is the DA spokesperson on defence, asked the following question to the presidency. A. Whether Danelle Asia has applied for the conventional arms permit as envisaged in the Act before its incorporation as a juristic entity to the National Convention Arms Control Committee. 1. If Danelle Asia has indeed applied for such permit, why would such permit be considered? This is because the possessing of such application is deemed to be an irregularity. B. What is the NCACC going to do about this matter, granted that if they had indeed applied, it would be an irregularity? C. When did the NCACC know about this matter? And D. When did the chairperson of the NCACC inform the Joint Committee, the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, about this matter? So allow me to read you the reply. According to the records of the NCACC, Denel Asia has not applied for a permit to the NCACC. The NCACC would appreciate any evidence or information relating to such application, as this would aid the committee to investigate the matter conclusively. Chairperson, that is incredibly worrying. That is incredibly worrying. So now we have the Minister of Finance telling us that there's irregularities. We have the NCACC, through the Presidency, telling us there's irregularities. We have Minister Brown telling us that she hasn't been informed of it, yet we have the Nalfia telling us that everything's fine. So who's lying to who here, Chair? Because that's what we need to get to the bottom of. Chair, you yourself and myself received a letter from previous board chairperson of Denel, where they felt themselves compelled to write to us as a committee before Denel appeared before us today. And many things that are being discussed today are being blamed on previous board. And Chair, one of the comments that must be brought to this committee is in a statement made. The statement made in the press release of 24th of April 2016 by Denel that the previous board considered the formation of Denel Asia is not factually correct. The previous board did not consider any action. Furthermore, the press release refers to agents and the problems and businesses associated with appointments and part of the business rationale for the joint marketing venture. The group CEO and previous board instituted the normalization of contract for agents and the new management model early in their term 2012. No problem has been experienced since. So now we have a previous board chair who is compelled to write to us now because a new board is appearing, blaming a previous board. Chair, somewhere, somehow, we have to get to the bottom of it. And it's in the committee that we need to get to the bottom of this. So Chair, it's very simple questions. Number one, is the Denel board trying to tell us that Minister Wadan and Treasury are lying? That's the first question. Two, is the Denel board telling us that Minister Brown is lying about her knowledge of the deal and her knowledge of the suspicion? And three, what involvement, interest, connection, or causal link is there between any of the Denel members sitting for us today, directors of the board, or officials of Denel and the Gupta family? And it's those questions that we need answers to today in this portfolio, Chairperson. Thank you. Honourable Singh?
Yeah. Chairperson, I just wish to contend that in the next 25 minutes, we would not be able to do justice to ourselves, to Denel, and to the other parties that are involved in these elections, whether it's over the suspension or whether it's over joint venture. You know, the audi alteram partem rule is a very important rule in law. And I think it's appropriate for us as a committee to have before us representatives of National Treasury, representatives from the department, who can also speak to this issue, and then we can have a serious engagement. Now, I've been given to understand, because I did contact Treasury, that there is a meeting set for the 25th between Denel and themselves, or they're going to deal with the matter on the 25th. That's what I was officially informed by the Secretariat of the Committee this morning. Now, I don't know what discussions are going to take place there, but I just want to follow on Honorable Mazzoni. You know, we can split hairs here over days. They should have responded in 30 days, and they took 35, and if they don't respond, the common rule of law says, if somebody doesn't respond, then we can continue. But these are serious issues. This is serious money we are talking about here. This is big money, and people who are in the media for more than one reason. And I think it would have been wise of the people at Denel to have stepped back for once and said, well, we haven't received this from GPE. We haven't received an official letter from National Treasury. Why don't we go back to them What would 1 or 2 weeks do? What is the hurry? What was the hurry in trying to force this joint venture, a partnership with them? So, I mean, these are questions that they need to ask. Now we are told about a cash crunch, 455 million rand, allegedly that it will go down the drain, or that they will have to pay within by the end of June. Where are they going to find the money? What's this going to do to the balance sheet of Kenya? What is it going to do to the credibility of Kenya? So I think we are not going to get all the answers here, Honorable Chairperson. And if we do, it will be from one perspective. And I think it will be fair for us to receive everybody, even if we have to sit for 1 or 2 days after this so-called recess and deal with this matter. I think it's a matter that, as some members said early on, doesn't only affect us here, but it affects the country, the image of the country, the image of Denal. And we want Denal to continue having the kind of image that it's enjoyed nationally and internationally. So I would propose that, yes, we can get answers, but we can't take it further than that, and we need to have further intensive engagements with other role players. DPE has been mentioned. They wrote in and gave some kind of permission. Did they? Did they not? Why is the minister not telling us that? Even on the suspension, I mean, you're right, Honorable Mazzoni. The minister doesn't know about it. She was not informed. See, Chairperson, as a committee, we've always been speaking about this arm's length approach with state-owned companies. And that's something we've got to deal with as a committee, and as parliament, and as executive. The kind of, you know, we've had Eskom, we've had everybody else come before us, and then they, quote-unquote, hide behind companies' acts and everything else. We accept that. We accept that their board has got the authority to do certain things. But why is it then that we keep bailing many of them, not Denel, but other state-owned companies? So we have a direct interest. The taxpayer has a direct interest in what happens in state-owned companies. We just can't pass on the responsibility to a board somewhere. So I think there are many issues that we have to talk about moving forward. So I propose that we have another engagement. 1 or 2 days with all the relevant role players, and preferably after the 25th, if the 25th is the day when National Treasury is going to engage them, or maybe on the same day, we all can get together and talk about this issue. Thank you.
Honorable Ted. Oh, Honorable Lien, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Professor. And without any waste of time, Chairperson, I have the same feeling that a further broad engagement around these issues is inevitable. Inevitable in the sense that the Department of Defense, Treasury, DPE, has also a responsibility to provide us with their side of the story. Because by the look of things now, as we have been prompted to have this meeting, it's because of the general sensational reporting by our media in South Africa, of which we also have a responsibility to give everyone else a benefit of doubt up until we get the true facts, the legitimacy of what we are discussing, without first painting individuals and collective institutions whose responsibility is to ensure that what Denel is doing cannot just be rubbish if something untoward has happened 100%. So the achievements that we have been told here cannot be ignored as if we are only people who are carrying red bands, we only enjoy ourselves when something is wrong. We must give credit where it is due. The global standing of South Africa requires that institutions like Denel have to participate at that level, legitimately so. So if there is something untoward, there must be facts. It should not be hearsay. We must not be guided by the media. Our informers are not media. We have our own responsibility as public representatives to bring everything on the table and say, we have a belief that this has not been done according to the rules. But for us to say now, all what has been said here isn't relevant and it's not needed. What we want to hear here is that people must say a particular minister is lying. Here we are doing this and that. So at this moment, I think Honorable Mazzoni, as well as Honorable Singh, yeah, quite correct for us to have some quality time and deal with these matters, and even involve people whose expertise are to investigate, analyze, assess, and give credible information to advise us to move forward, colleagues. Thank you.
Another thing.
Okay, I'm partly covered. You, this is, in my own understanding, the very first interaction of the control committee on a matter like this one. Agree that it's an issue that is of national interest. Everybody is concerned about these issues that are being reported. But I'm saying we have not yet officially, as the portfolio committee, interacted with the minister in particular on this particular issue to get the other right. I'm aware of the fact that letters have been exchanged between some honorable members and the minister and some of the people who are concerned, including pressure. But I'm saying my starting point is from your office, who might need guidance. If it would be proper to say the minister is lying in a meeting of this nature, to me it cannot be correct. Because we have just started now with interactions or with the board of the department now to talk about a matter like this one. We have not yet met her to try and get the other side of the story as the portfolio committee. I'm aware that the members might have been at individual level being interacting with them. Because as Honorable Luyang has indicated, it can be correct that we just rubbish every good thing that has been happening in the campus on the basis of some of these issues. The company, one of the companies that has been best run, I don't want to talk about the order book of 35 billion qualified in audit for the past 10 years. I don't want to talk about these issues. But I have two issues that I might need clarity from the board, from the issues as presented. One is on the 2015 blacklisting of the company, which was later cleared. I thought it's important that as the portfolio committee we be clarified on what were the issues which were involved in that particular area. From the presentation, the common was later cleared as such. The second one relates to, in the process of the presentation, while you were talking about your relations with other companies and countries and other stakeholders, the United Emirates relations, where you had the UAE as being high on the agenda, would manage to produce 51 million. Vis-a-vis the 675 million, I think it was the buzzword. And I became concerned because the UAE was high on the agenda. But looking at the figures there, I see 52 million vis-a-vis 675. I had thought in my own understanding it was then going to be the other way around. Perhaps is one of the issues that we might need to be clarified on. I am as well concerned about the suspensions of people. We have never been taken through disciplinary hearings. That's an issue that really concerns all of us. It can't be correct, really. Moreover, now we're talking about, with the GCO in particular, we're talking about the person. If it's correct, we contract was going to expire the 1 January 2017. Now already there is a decision which says we're not renewing the contract, unless it does a mistake. So from the presentation says 2017 is next year in one. There's a decision now already which says we're not renewing a contract expiring in 2017. Surely it cannot be correct. To me, I think there's something that needs further explanation in that particular area. But as I've indicated, I agree with Ralph Bushini and some of the members who are saying open and above this infection. I definitely need another session to interrogate some of these issues further. Thank you, sir. And you invite pressure as well, as it has been suggested.
The treasurer is meeting them next week. I'm told, Honorable Singh, we verify that. But we don't want us to overcrowd issues. Maybe try to deport other issues as well to discuss with them. But I think it will be important for us to agree on another date with the board, because we also received some emails from the previous board with serious allegations. So it's important for us to agree on a date, and then we can inform them when we don't have the pressure of time right now, so that we really deal with the issue. I don't know if maybe the DG wants to say something. Honorable, do you want to?
Yes, I just wanted to highlight one point on Section 64, Section 3, that stipulates that if no response is received from the executive authority within 30 days, which was explained here by the presenters, the applicant may assume that approval has been granted. Chair, it says may assume. It doesn't say must assume. I think the denial or the board has got a legal presence that may can advise them on the issues of may and must, which might be able to be defended even in court, that it says that the act says it may assume, but it doesn't press in saying it must assume. Because of the type of the nature of the deal, or the nature of the deal, it also needs a person to understand that this deal might take us to something that do not that are not acceptable governmentally, or is not acceptable within the society itself. So we must look for a legal advice to take this further. Because I think this, for us to sit on Section 3, it's not going to help us anyway, even if we can take them to court. And also, I also agree with the committee that we need further engagement with the board, the and also the treasury, if we can have that joint meeting together with them. Thank you.
Gigi?
Good morning, Chair. A correction, I'm the DG for defense in the department. Unfortunately, the DG could not join us. The DG unfortunately is tied up with other matters. He could not join us this morning. But, Chair, we'll have to be guided by the committee, as has been stated, that there's other stakeholders whose views will need to be factored in. In a discussion that will ensue at a date to be determined.
Let me give Chair the opportunity to say something, though it won't be enough for the day, but I think it's also fair to respond briefly on these issues the members have raised. Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Upon receipt of your invitation to come here, the purpose of this meeting was set very clear to discuss recent media reports or denial. We accordingly prepare a presentation and look forward for an engagement with you, and we are here to engage with you. We understood that you have time to listen to us. Because it's very important for us to clear this misunderstanding. So what I'm going to do, I will deal with all the matters which are within the competency of the board in trying to answer, and Mr. Mtuan will deal with matters within the operations of the mail. So firstly, let me clear it out in terms of the disciplinary processes. It is not true that the three executives were never called for disciplinary hearing. Disciplinary hearing was called on the first occasion, which was in January this year. The hearing was postponed at the request of the employees because, amongst other things, the legal representative was not present. The hearing were postponed to a date. On the arrival of that date, the parties agreed that there should be mediation process. Then the hearing could not proceed. The parties then agreed that a mediator must be appointed, and upon exchange of a note, the parties agreed to accept to Mr. Pretorius to be appointed as a mediator. Mediation took place before Mr. Pretorius. The parties were representing themselves, the landlord, and the employee's consent. During those mediation process, that is when the parties explored possibility to avert further damage to the reputation of the company and to avert whatever expenses were going to be incurred. The mediation process did not conclude the issues, and this was around February. And then the parties then resorted to continue to use their legal representative to mediate. The legal representative mediated on the matter to a point where the former chief executive officer made certain settlement proposals. And those certain settlement proposals, in the best interest of Dilel, Dilel felt that those settlement proposals made sense. And specifically trying to ask Honorable Tate, why making a decision not to recommend a renewal now when the contract ends January next year? During the board meeting of the 10th of September, the former chief executive officer made a request to the board to say that he's requesting for his contract to be renewed. I'm talking about 10 September 2015. That was the first meeting of the board. The board felt that there were no proper case made before it to either decide a renewal or non-renewal. Then a case was further made by the suspended company secretary that, in fact, the former chairperson of the board had written a letter which was never sent to the shareholder recommending that the contract should be renewed. But the letter was never sent, and the board felt, as it was new and it was the first meeting of the board, it could not take a decision on the 10th of September last year to either say we recommend or not recommend. So the decision that I'm communicating to you now emanates from the request of the former chief executive, emanate from the settlement proposal which were on the table. So it is not just at from nowhere the board has decided to do that. And the reasons which were advanced by him to request a board to extend his contract last 10 September was simply he made a case to say, look, the position of chief executive officer, if I were to leave, I need to be given enough time so that if you're not taking me along, I will then have an opportunity to try to source another employment. Because it's not easy to be employed at the same level. That was the reasons why, because we asked him, why you bring this request to us so early? And he said, given the nature of this position, I need to know now so that I can go and look for employment. Obviously, in essence, he was saying he could then be released on time so that he can source another employment in the event is not needed. So what has happened, it is in line with the discussions which have taken place between the board and him. So to say that we suspended people and dismiss people and then hold them for hearing is unheard of. We have never done that. We did not dismiss the CFO. The CFO is undergoing a disciplinary hearing. It started in January this year. The hearing was interrupted because of the mediation processes. Before Pretorius and before the respective representatives. Same with the company secretary, same with the former chief executive. The charges against the former chief executive were served last year in December. And as I've indicated to you, the charges emanate from this transaction. Honorable Mazur, you indicated a very profound statement. You said, how on earth a reasonable chief executive officer can change 5-year loan to 6 months? This is what happened here. This is what happened. The first, we have to pay Nedbank in 6 months. We have extended it from last year, 30 October. We requested another 6 months from Nedbank so that we can make a plan to pay. Then the 6 months was expiring when in fact expired end of March. Again, we went to say, look, we want another 6 months so that we can. This is what we're dealing with here. This is the CFO and the former chief executive who have changed 5-year loan term to 6 months. And you have correctly put it that how on earth can one do that? This is what we are saddled with here. And this is what we have told you that the shareholder did not approve. I hear the point that you made that you received letters from former chairpersons of board, whatever. Look, we're not going to comment on this. We have never, in any media statement, blamed that Dinel Asia was formed by the old board. We have never made that statement. The statement that we have made as a board was simply that the presentation which eventually led to the formation of Dinel Asia was presented to us on the 10th of September, 2015. I should assume that members understand how the board operates. The board receives submissions from management. The board does not generate any submission. Anything that comes to the board goes through various committees of the board before it gets to the main board. The issue relating to the formation or going to the Asia-Pacific market, it appeared before the current board subcommittee on audit risk, way before the 10th of September. The committee had the matter, and Mr. Saluti presented the matter before the board on the 10th of September. What I'm saying to you, whether you call it in Malaysia, or whether by then when it was presented, it was a joint venture to go to the Asian Pacific market, it really doesn't matter. But the fact of the matter is, it was presented before the board, and the board gave him the authority to find a joint venture. And what happened with Mr. Saluti, then the board decided to suspend him in light of some of the issues that were raised, that how on earth you change a 5-year loan agreement to a 6-month, and now we have 30 days to pay and do not have the money. So it is one of the reasons why the suspension was. So I repeat, we have never made any media statement to say Dinel Asia was formed by the old board. We never made that statement. The statement that I repeat before you is, for the first time, the new board said on the 10th of September, and among the things it considered was to authorize the management to go to find a joint venture to go to Asian Pacific market, which was done. So I will not get into the specific whether Minister Brown is lying, Minister Parvin Buddhan is lying. That is not our space. Our space is to come here and give you the facts. What we are saying to you are the facts. National Treasury has got pre-notification dated 30 October. So is DPE. National Treasury has got PFMA application dated 11 December. So is DPE. Those are the facts. Those documents are in the possession of those departments. I'm not, and Dinel is not here, to say to a minister of this government that ministers are lying, members of parliament are lying. That is not our space. We respect whatever position they might have said, they might not have said, and it is not for us to pass any judgment to any comments made, either in favor or against Dinel. But what we are doing to you here is to give you the factual background of this matter as supported by the documents. We take your job very seriously. And none of the submissions that we're making here are either false or fabricated. the interpretation of PFMA, the interpretation of PFMA with respect, it is not what we are here for. We have a view on the matter, so members can have a view on the matter. Members can interpret May, members can interpret May as meaning anything else. But the bottom line is, the question that you must ask yourself is whether there has been violation of the law in terms of forming delineation. If the difference is interpretation, the difference of interpretation does not mean a violation of the law. The word may mean may not. And if you read section 54, subsection 3, together with the supplementary notes from National Treasury, because apart from the PFMA, the National Treasury has developed what they call practice notes. And in terms of the practice notes, they say, for you to assume the permission is given, you must have a proof of receipt that your application has been received. DNL has got a proof of receipt that National Treasury has received the application on the 11th of December. And the practice notes go further to say, once you have got a proof that your submissions have been made, you can then proceed. But the practice notes go further to say, look, the Executive Authority on National Treasury, they have an obligation. If they want more time, they must write a letter to a public entity to say, we want more time. And in this regard, there is no letter where they've requested to say, you know, we want more time. As the chief acting CFO indicated to you, he actually gave you the breakdown of days. Within those days, there is no communication from legal treasury. And reading the act with the practice notes from the National Treasury, they nailed perfectly and legally so, assume that the permission has been granted in line of the provision of the PFMA, read together with the practice notes. So to a point that members might have a difference or might have preferred now to have brought to National Treasury, that is not a matter of substance. The substance is the law complied with, yes or no? And we have given you our side of this story to say we have complied with the law. The interpretation, if you have got a different view, does not mean we did not comply with the law. So I want to repeat to you that what is important for the name, it's whether this joint venture makes any business sense and makes any legal sense. I think we have addressed you in terms of both. The legal sense, we have told you how we comply. If you want to check the documents, National Treasury has got documents. If you want to receive, to see proof of document being sent by DNL to National Treasury, DNL will have to give you those. So, the second concern is that does this make business sense? We are telling you, we do not have money to invest in the export markets. We have a partner here who is prepared to put 100 million rand. I mean, the story went out to say certain people have captured DNL. There is not a single cent that DNL is putting on DNL Asia business. What DNL is putting on DNL Asia is when there is order on specific ring-fence products, DNL will then deliver to the client. All the money relating to marketing and operational costs, they are covered by the partner. DNL will only supply the product. When the board of DNL decided on the approval of the PFMA application on the 7th of December, DNL board gave many conditions to management to say, look, we approve this deal, provided DNL IP is secured, AMSCO IP is secured, and DNL is not going to pay money as a result of this, and provided there is proper anti-corruption measures. The management went and developed anti-corruption strategies. DNL, as you know, it's highly regulated in terms of our internal legislation. And one of the conditions for DNL Asia is to fully comply with our national legislation. So bribery, corruption, there are measures that are put in place to deal with those matters. The fact that some of the shareholders are either connected to some politicians or some of the shareholders of GRSA have a relationship with certain people, that matter was concealed. And the management had appointed a law firm in South Africa and in India to do a due diligence report. Due diligence reports were done. Certain issues were raised from those due diligence reports. And one of the conditions of the board was the board approved the submission of the PSMA, provided all the recommendations from the due diligence report have been complied with, of which one of it was how to deal with people who are politically exposed. And the strategy was put in place in order to deal with those matters. And one of the matters was in terms of the governance of denial Asia structure. Denial Asia structure still is subject to the laws of this country and subject to the shareholders' contacts between Denel Board and the shareholder representative. So all issues relating to, because I heard Honorable Member talking about illegal activities. Denel is not involved in any illegal activities. In fact, Denel was blacklisted in India allegedly for illegal activities more than, I think, 15 years ago. Denel has been since fighting cases in India to try to get out of that illegal activities. So we are very much vigilant in terms of what the marketing people of Denel do and what the joint vendor partners of Denel do. We are not involved in any criminal activities, neither any of our partners. Nobody has brought any information that any of our partners is involved in criminal activities. And if such information is brought to us, we will not do business with a partner. We will terminate the relationship. The relationship with us, with VRLASA Asia, is very clear. They have to subscribe to a code that we as DNA, as the state-owned companies, will subscribe to, of which anti-bribery, anti-corruption, money laundering, all those things, they have to subscribe to. And further condition is they need to put that money. If the money is not being put on the table, we walk away. So it is not that we are locked into this relationship. If certain conditions are not fulfilled, including activities which are illegal and activities or the money is not coming on the table or any manipulation of some sort, then we will walk away. So it's very clear on the agreement that we have done with them that at any time, if there are issues undesirable to the shareholder, which means the South African government, be it relationship with British countries or whatever the case, or foreign policy issue, denial will pull out of the conflict. So the other questions, I think Mr. Mishwana will deal with them, which are specifically operational questions. So just give us indulgence so that we can, as you leave this house, some of the media reports that you get, I'm sure you can read them within a particular context.
I don't think we'll have time to hear the procedural matters you want to explain to ourselves. But as members indicated earlier on that time is not on our side, we'll rearrange the meeting because these are very important issues, both for the entity and for South African public, because corporate the governance issues are key for the success of the country and the state-owned entity itself. So we are raising this issue because we need to see the NEL performing to its capacity. And once we hear anything which disturbs that, we get worried. We will rearrange the meeting and we need to exchange information as well because it is not about interrogating what the board is doing. It's about helping one another, to find one another, how to work in this environment where there are slanders, there are malicious reporting, and so on. But allow me to conclude by saying we want to thank you very much for coming to this press meeting. And the explanation given to ourselves, we still have to go and look into it. Also, maybe through the members, have a legal opinion on these issues, because we are not legal experts, to understand what happened in both relationships and so on, in particular the treasury and the shareholder itself, the Department of Public Enterprises. But we really appreciate your time for coming and the explanation. We will further engage with yourself, and thank you very much. Honorable member? Yes, honorable member?
Chair, just before you close, the Danelle's offered to furnish us with the proof of receipt of all the documents that were sent in. I think it's essential that we do get those documents, Chair. So if they would send it through to you and then you would disperse it to the committee, I would be much grateful. Thank you.
Yes, Chair?
I think the committee is also entitled to either delegate one or two or three members from the committee to go to Danelle and just go through the fiscal documents, so that when you come to engage, you would be better informed. So our doors are open. So we're inviting you. You can delegate whoever the members to come to Danelle. The executive and the board will take you through the documents. Because when we talk about PFMA pre-notification, you have no sight of those documents. You can come and then you can be taken through those documents. Whatever proof you need is there, you will be given. I think that will make your next meeting more informative. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll honor the invitation. We'll discuss amongst ourselves, and then we will, the secretary will inform us. On that note, the meeting is adjourned, and thank you very much.
Thank you.